Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Aavas Financiers Limited Q1 FY26 earnings conference call. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performance and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on a touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now hand the conference over to Mr. Rakesh Shinde, Head Investor Relations of Aavas Financiers Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Muskan. Good evening, everyone. I extend a very warm welcome to all participants, and thank you for joining us on today's earnings call to discuss the financial and operational performance of our company for Q1 FY26, along with the business outlook going forward. The result and the investor presentation have been uploaded to the stock exchanges and are also available on our company website. I hope you had a chance to review them. Joining me today is the entire management team of Aavas. We will begin this call with opening remarks from our MD, Sachinder Bhinder, CFO, Ghanshyam Rawat, and CRO, Ashutosh Atre. This will be followed by a Q&A session. With that, let me now hand over the call to Sachinder. Over to you, Sachinder.
Thank you, Rakesh, and good evening. Thank you all for joining us this evening. I truly appreciate your presence and continued support. Q1 FY26 was a landmark quarter for Aavas, marking a pivotal moment in our journey. We successfully concluded the change in the promoter process and are proud to welcome CVC Capital Partners as a new promoter. The trust and conviction shown by CVC in Aavas is a strong testament to the strength of our franchise and the vast opportunity in the affordable housing finance sector in India. Their global perspective, institutional depth, and strategic insight will position Aavas to accelerate into its next phase of growth and innovation. I would like to take this opportunity to express my sincere gratitude to the visionary leadership of our former promoters, Kedaara Capital and Partners Group. Under their stewardship, what began as an ambitious proof of concept has grown into a scalable institution, one that has transformed lives and made affordable homeownership a reality for thousands of families. The quarter also marks a significant milestone in our commitment to governance, transparency, and putting the customer at the center of everything we do. We've taken a historic step by transitioning to a realization-based model for disbursement recognition, a forward-looking and conservative approach that reflects our intent to stay one step ahead, aligning not just with regulatory expectations but with their true spirit. The change offers a more accurate view of underlying business performance, strengthens transparency, and reinforces our long-standing focus on quality over quantity. On the demand front, we are encouraged by the strong traction. Logins volume grew by 17% YoY, indicating a robust underlying housing demand. In markets where we hold a higher share, we are witnessing a healthy appreciation in real estate prices, further underscoring structural demand strength. On the credit front, we continue to maintain a cautiously optimistic stance on underwriting. While we have not observed any material deterioration in our own asset quality, we remain vigilant given cautionary signals reported by some peers in specific customer segments, geographies, and risk profiles. In this context, drop in our sanction ratio is a deliberate outcome of our calibrated risk strategy and not a reflection of demand. Our strategic focus remains on optimizing yield and credit quality. We achieved a 35 basis points YoY improvement in the yield this quarter, driven by targeted initiatives to enhance portfolio mix and pricing. Recent trends are encouraging. Disbursement growth in July reached approximately 16% YoY, demonstrating positive momentum and reinforcing our confidence in gaining further traction in the coming quarters. We continue to maintain best-in-class credit metrics and are actively evaluating our credit framework to ensure it remains robust and responsive to evolving market dynamics. This disciplined approach helps us balance growth, yield, and asset quality, positioning us well for the quarters ahead. Considering the perceived stress in certain sectors of salaried class, we remain focused on the self-employed segment, where we continue to see a better risk-reward profile. Additionally, a strategy to focus more on loans exceeding 5 lakh, which typically exhibit stronger asset quality trends and portfolio behavior. Government initiatives such as inter-subsidy scheme under PMAY 2.0 combined with a supportive interest rate environment continue to bolster home buyer sentiment and improve affordability. I am pleased to report that over 450 Awas customers have benefited from the schemes, receiving subsidies totaling more than rupees 15 million. We also want to acknowledge the NHB for its continued leadership in promoting transparency, governance, inclusion, diversity and capability building in the sector. We are proud to share Awas has won the Product Innovation Award at NHB's inaugural Housing Finance Excellence Awards 2025. Returning to our operations, while the transition to realization-based accounting has meaningfully impacted our sanction-to-disbursement ratio, we have now seen signs of normalization. In fact, July disbursement grew 16% YOY, reflecting a gradual return to our business-as-usual levels. Our AUM grew 16% YOY, despite a softer disbursement quarter impacted by a change in disbursement recognition in quarter 1. Based on the current trends, we now expect a full-year growth in the range of 18-20%. While we remain confident of a rebound starting quarter 2, we will have better visibility on overall growth as we progress further into the year and continue to pursue our objectives with prudence and discipline. In terms of our distribution strategy, we are beginning to see positive results from our diversified approach. We have successfully empaneled digital partners such as CSE, eMitra and India Post Bank, all of which are contributing to a robust and diverse lead generation pipeline. I am pleased to share that within less than a year of onboarding CSE, we have already receiving more than 1,000 plus monthly logins, a strong indicator of potential in this partnership. Additionally, we are continuing to strengthen our distribution network with plans to open 10 new branches in September. As highlighted earlier, our strategy this year is to front-load branch expansion in the first half rather than concentrating opening in the second half, as in the previous years. I'm also pleased to share that we are entering a new state, Tamil Nadu, and all 10 of these upcoming branches will be located there. As we look ahead, our long-term strategic priorities remain clear to fully leverage our strong digital and operation platforms, further strengthen governance, drive scale efficiently, optimize cost and enhance productivity across the organization. With that preamble, I would like to take through our quarterly performance. We have delivered an AUM growth of 16% YOY, reaching an AUM of rupees 207 billion. During quarter 1 FY25, we disbursed loan worth rupees 11.5 billion, maintaining our focus on quality origination. Our net profit for quarter 1 FY26 grew by 10% YOY to rupees 1.4 billion, led by robust 16% YOY growth in NII on account of healthy improvement in spreads. Our network continues to compound steadily, growing at 16% YOY with the strength of our capital position driven by consistent compounding internal accruals. Our spread improved sequentially by 22 bps to 5.11, while our calculated spread rose by 16 bps to 6.03 in quarter 1 FY26. Reported NIMs expanded by 16 bps during the quarter to 7.48%. Continued focus on low ticket, high quality underwriting has led to a 35 bps increase in the incremental business yields. The OPEX to asset ratio declined sequentially by 25 bps to 3.46. On a YOY basis, the increase is primarily due to a higher ESOP cost. Adjusted for this, the ratio would have been 3.34%. Our asset quality continues to be pristine with 1 plus DPD of less than 5% at 4.15% as of June 2025, while GNPA was 1.22%. The sequential uptick in the delinquency is seasonal and has already moderated, with 1 plus DPD falling below 4% in July. Credit costs remain with the guidance of 24 bps. We continue to maintain our guidance of keeping credit costs below 25 bps on a sustainable basis. ROA stood at 2.94%, while ROE at 12.56%, reflecting the impact of strategic investment and ESOP-related investment in talent. We remain committed to delivering quality, profitable and sustainable growth powered by technology, efficiency and cost optimization. With a robust risk management framework, deep and diversified distribution network and the strong execution capabilities of our experienced team, we are confident of achieving our strategic milestones and delivering the long-term value to all stakeholders. With that, ladies and gentlemen, I conclude my prepared remarks and I would now hand over to our CFO, Ghanshyam Rawat, to discuss the financials in detail.
Thank you, Sachinder ji. Good evening, everyone, and warm welcome to our earnings. To provide update First, we are covering a borrowing. I am pleased to share that we have received a fresh sanction from National Housing Bank, a gap of full 1 year, and we successfully completed a drawdown of 2 billion rupees in this quarter. This will further provide cushion to cost of borrowing and strengthen our funding position. Our ability to reduce cost of fund reflects the strength of our one of the most well-diversified and resilient liability franchise in the industry. Staying true to our strategy of innovation in the sourcing, we anticipated a potential easing in interest rates and proactively shifted a meaningful portion of our borrowing to EBLR-linked instruments. This forward-looking approach is now delivering results, with our liabilities repricing faster than those of many peers. As a result, we have already seen a 22 basis point reduction in overall cost of borrowing from EBLR-linked borrowings, with incremental borrowing now being raised at even more competitive rates. We expect continued downward rate of interest on our overall cost of fund. We scale up borrowing through the channels. We continue to borrow judiciously, raising around 17.03 billion at 7.82% for quarter 1 FY26. In this quarter, we raised NCDs amounting to rupees 4 billion from marquee institutions. Our average tenure of borrowing continued to be longer than that of our assets, ensuring a very positive ALM across all the markets. As of 30th June 2025, total outstanding borrowing stood at 182.86 billion rupees. The borrowing mix as of 31st March 2025 comprised of 49% from term loan, 25% from assignment, 14% from NHB refinancing, 11% from debt capital market. We have 38% borrowing linked to external benchmarks such as Repo, T-Bill and MIBOR, 20% linked to sub-3-month MCLRs, enabling faster repricing of nearly 58% of our total borrowing in line with the interest rate movements. Lender supports remain strong as Aavas continue to evolve. We maintain access to diversified and cost-effective long-term funding. Our relationship with development finance institutions remain robust, supporting our strategic funding goals. As of 30th June 2025, we maintain ample liquidity and including cash and cash equivalent of an unavailed cash credit limit of 18.77 billion rupees. Documented unavailed sanction limit of 25.98 billion. During the quarter, our cost of borrowing declined by 22 basis point quarter over quarter to 8.02, driven by proactive liability management and repricing benefits. Now, profitability and capital position. Our net interest margin in absolute term grew by 16% year on year in quarter 1 FY26. Net interest margin is a percentage of total asset expanded by 17 basis point year on year to 7.48% in Q1 FY26. We remain well capitalized with a net worth of 45.1 billion and capital to risk weighted assets ratio CAR is 43.2%, significantly above the regulatory requirement. Now I would hand over to line to our CRO, Mr. Ashutosh Atre, to discuss the assets quality.
Thank you, Ghanshyamji. Good evening, everyone. I am pleased to share the key portfolio risk parameters with you. Asset quality and provisioning. Aavas is strongly positioned to continue delivering industry-leading asset quality. Our asset quality remains within the guided range with 1-day past due well below 5% at 4.15% in Q1 FY26 and gross stage 3 and net stage 3 is under 1.25%, stood at 1.22% and 0.84% respectively. We did observe some seasonal uptick in delinquencies during the quarter, as is typical in the first quarter. However, 1+ DPD levels have already shown normalization trends in July, reinforcing our confidence in the stability and resilience of the portfolio. In terms of geography, average 1+ DPD and GNPA in our home state continues to remain well below 4% and 1% of AUM respectively, whereas some emerging states of North continues to have 1+ DPD and GNPA well below 3% and 1% of AUM respectively. Similarly, in terms of ticket size of more than 5 lakh, 1+ DPD and GNPA remained well below 4% and 1% of AUM. Our total ECL provisioning, including that for COVID-19 impact as well as Resolution Framework 2.0, stood at 1.14 billion as of 30th of June 2025. Our disciplined underwriting standards, coupled with proactive risk management framework, have enabled us to stay ahead of emerging macroeconomic challenges. While several peers have reported asset quality pressure due to sectoral or regional headwinds, our portfolio has remained resilient. We continue to follow a rigorous credit assessment process, stress tested across multiple economic scenarios, and remain selectively calibrated in our exposure to high-risk segments. This approach has helped us preserve asset quality, which continues to rank among the best in the industry. Barring few isolated pockets, we are not seeing any broad-based credit quality concerns. Our early warning systems remain stable, and with credit performance well under control, we expect growth to start picking up in the coming quarters. With this, I open the floor for Q&A session.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Kunal Shah from Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sachindrabhi. So, firstly, with respect to disbursements, so you indicated because of change in the recognition, the way now we are doing it, suppose the credit to the customers. So, would this have the recurring effect over the next 2-3 quarters and for the entire fiscal as well? Or do we expect that whatever business, maybe we were not able to book it in 1Q, that would happen in 2Q and 3Q and we could see a relatively higher run rate of disbursements over next 2 quarters. And just to clarify, this 18-20% which you highlighted for FY26, that was with respect to disbursement growth or AUM growth?
Yeah, thanks, Kunal. To answer on the 18-20%, that is the AUM growth which I referred to. Secondly, you are spot on saying that whatever we've had because of this realization as one of the metrics, we will cover that up in quarter two and quarter two. This is a rolling impact which happens because we had, including the check cut, if you would look at, we would have had been in a double-digit kind of a scenario on the disbursement. But as we trend into the new quarters, which is quarter two and quarter three, we will see that it's settling down.
So when you say like July disbursements have are growing at 16-odd%, so what is the run rate now in terms of the absolute number?
So on a run rate, we are anywhere between close to 600, if I were to really put that in perspective. 550 to 600 is the current run rate which is there.
So July we have got to 550-600 crores.
That is a normal range, yeah, that's the range. So as we speak, we have 16% YY, and these are, Kunal, these are fully check realized, which we are referring to.
Yeah. So compared to maybe less than 400 crores, which is there on an average for 1Q, we are back to 550, 600 odd crores.
Yeah, spot on.
Yeah. And secondly, maybe we saw one of the peers getting the credit rating upgrade. So how are our discussions with the same credit?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Management line has been connected. Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, Kunal was there on the call. So we are referring to Kunal's question on the rating upgrade.
Yeah, Kunal.
I think complete. Kunal is... Can you connect it to Kunal?
Hold on, sir. Just give me 2 minutes.
In the meantime, we can talk about what the question was. It was related to a rating upgrade. So we are in discussions, and I'll have Ghanshyamji really speak on what are the kind of question.
Kunal?
Yes, sir, Kunal.
Yeah, Kunal, please. So wanted to check with respect to credit rating.
As Aavas, we are almost already close to $200 billion of ₹2 billion of AUM basically. Assets quality is a pristine. We have 1+ and 90+. Our lifetime write-off is one of the best in the industry. We have just 11 basis points less than that. On liability side, we are one of the best franchise. We are the liability side. So by seeing all these things, we are quite optimist, and we are engaging with the rating agencies. Our existing rating agencies are CARE and ICRA. We are engaging with both of them. And we are hopeful they will take up our case positively. But ultimately, we want to say all rating agencies are very independent rating agencies. It is their own decisions while assessing each and every company. But as a management, we feel confident our case is due for rating positive look up in the coming quarter.
Great. Okay. Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Kunal.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good evening, and thank you for giving me the opportunity. My question was on asset quality front. So while there are some green shoots that you highlighted visible in the month of July, but if you look at the 1Q performance versus the other 1Q performances, the DPD deterioration has been much higher. So what would you attribute this relatively higher deterioration in the DPD movement, or even let's say GST plus GS3 numbers? I think you also highlighted there are some pockets where relatively the DPD deterioration has been much higher. So which are these pockets?
So, thanks, Shripal. There is a 15 bps sequential increase in the GSA, and this is largely seasonal in nature. So, historically, Q1 tends to show some movement in delinquencies due to timing factors, and typically we see recovering starting in Q2 with normalization by Q3 and Q4 well within our guided range. As for the 1+ DPT, it has risen approximately 75 bps, which is 50 bps YOY, but again, this is a primarily seasonal. Encouragingly, we've already seen a reversal in July, which has closed below the 4% mark, indicating the trend is stabilizing. From a geographic lens, we had highlighted a few markets where delinquency showed some spike. In response, we have proactively tightened credit norms in those areas. I would like to emphasize that there's nothing alarming. We understand these markets well and are familiar with their cyclical patterns. Furthermore, we already seen early resolutions happening in the current quarter and are confident of a rollback in delinquencies in Q2. Lastly, since we report GNP on a loan book, and given that the book size doesn't grow meaningfully this quarter, there is always a two to three bps impact from a denominator effect, which has slightly exaggerated the GNPA ratio.
Which pockets are these? If you highlight that, will be very helpful.
Yeah, on the pocket specific, we, as earlier spoken by our CRO, we are seeing some part of that in Maharashtra, MP, and a little bit on Karnataka.
Got it. And sir, my next question was to Ghanshyam, sir. What percentage of our bank borrowing is linked to repo and T-bill? I recall you said it's higher percentages, but what percentage is it?
We have around 38% linked to repo and T-bill and other EBLR linked benchmark, which is truly driven by the how the rate of interest is moving, interest rate scenario.
So 62% is linked with the MCLR.
Not 100% in 32. Out of that balance is roughly 24-25% linked to up to 3 month MCLR basically. 1 month MCLR. So those are faster moving bucket when interest rate bank start to passing on the transition repo link on the MCLR front basically.
Shripal, 38% is linked to EBLR, 22% is a fixed, and 40% is linked to MCLR.
Okay, got it. And one last question, on the NHB borrowing front, what was the rate that we were able to, you know, garner these funds?
Generally NHB is a, when they give the loan, there is a various schemes under they provide. Pradhan Mantri Awas Yojana is there, Women Ownership Empowerment Fund they have basically, but on an average it comes roughly 7% or sub 7% depending upon the what rate they are giving that quarter.
Okay, because like I think previous quarters you had highlighted that there was not material difference between, let's say, market-linked borrowing versus the NHB, because the NHB itself do not have much of the funds from the under schemes. So I think now you are saying that there is some benefit under some of these schemes, is it?
Yeah, NHB borrowing is always an important piece of funding, but it is a long-term borrowing. Yeah, but in after reduction, repo rate, all these things, 3 year, 7 year, AA, AA plus rated paper is also brought down to at 7.5% in the market basically.
Okay. Got it, sir. This is very helpful. Thank you. Good luck for the
next. Thank you.
Thanks, Shripal.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chintan Shah from ICICI Securities. Please go ahead.
Hello. So, firstly, sir, on the disbursements front, so given that we have moved to a realization-based model, had we not moved to this model, then what would have been the disbursements for the quarter?
Yeah, Chintan. As highlighted in my opening remarks, Chintan, the primary reason for the impact the quarter has been the operational shift and how we recognize the disbursement. Starting Q1, we had moved to check realization-based recognition process. This means as we now record disbursements only once the funds are actually credited to the customer's account rather than at the time of check issuance. This change has led to the significant drop in our sanction to disbursement conversion ratio, which declined 10 bps by to 75%. Typically, once a check is handed over to the customer, it takes about 15 to 30 days to get credited, depending upon the specific cases and specific geographies and the type of transaction. As a result, Chintan, any check which is issued close to 15th or the 20th of the month may not get realized within the same month, effectively pushing the month end for recognition purpose earlier than actual calendar month end. Having said this, it is also important that certain product categories such as MSME and LAP under an NHL segment were not impacted. They operate on 100% RTGS disbursement. In home loan, products like self-construction, plot plus construction also saw limited impact. However, categories like builder purchase, resale purchase were more severely affected due to the check-based disbursement structure. From a business activity perspective, if we would have had the same one, we would have been in a double-digit growth. And
double digit growth on the disbursement versus 5% YOY decline, right?
Yeah, right, spot on.
So that's on an YOY basis. Okay, sure. Got it. And so on this builder finance, so how much contribution in our disbursement would be from the builder finance?
So this is not about builder finance. It is a purchase where the person is buying based on the allotment by the builder or a resale purchase. And as you would appreciate, this takes its own time. And by the time the check realization happens, it has a definite period of anything where it ranges from 15 to 45 days, depending upon the geography, the location, and the type of transactions.
Yeah, so I mean to say that builder finance means wherever we are financing to the customer who has purchased it from the builder, like typically this disbursement would be like 15-20% of the total disbursement?
Oh, it's about 5-10%, it's not more than that. Because we are there in self-construction individual house and primarily in tier 3, tier 5 markets. So this is not one of the builder supply-led kind of markets that we focus on.
So I sorry, I just missed that number. You missed 5-10%, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So, okay, that's it from my side, and thank you.
Thanks, Ethan.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Abhijit Sirdiwal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my questions, and good evening, sirs. So two things, some of my questions could be a repetition because the line dropped a couple of times, so please excuse me in case it's a repetition. So the first thing is, just trying to understand from what you have reported in terms of yields, looks like we have not done any PLR changes during the quarter. So just trying to understand in July and August, have we made any PLR changes?
No, we have not made any PLR changes in the quarter.
Got it. And what's the thought process like now? I mean, we will also be reviewing sometime in the third quarter, is what most of your peers have shared. Is that the same thought process we also have, that PLRs will be reviewed sometime in the third quarter?
As we see, our cost of borrowing, we have seen 22 basis point improvement. And we want to see another one more quarter, how the pan out entire cost of borrowing. Then accordingly, I think we will take, as you rightly said, somewhere second quarter and or in third quarter, we will see how it is overall transition of a reduction in interest rate by regular by RBI is panning out in overall cost of borrowing, overall lending profile base. Accordingly, we will decide at that point of time.
Got it, Kanchanji. And then the only other question, Chinder sir, that I had was on asset quality. It has already been discussed by a few participants earlier, but what I'm trying to understand, sir, I mean, we have always come across as an affordable housing franchise which has the best collection, infrastructure collection franchise. And despite that, I mean, a 75 basis points deterioration in 1+ DPD, if my memory serves me right, only during the second COVID wave did we see some such kind of deterioration. So beyond the seasonality, right, and you also shared that things are looking better, the 1+ DPD number has declined below 4% in July. But we've seen this kind of deterioration, which was more pronounced than just seasonality in this quarter. So can you share with us in this broader forum, what is it what is it that exactly led to this in your view, and what is now kind of leading to recovery? Because a lot of times we hear this is because of macroeconomy, a weak macro, right? But macros have not really improved in the last maybe 1 or 2 months. So what is it that led to this, and in your view, what is kind of leading to the recovery now?
See, on the part of 1+, when you're referring to the COVID, it had ranged beyond 7-8%. So we never crossed 5% on our side as far as the 1+ is concerned. And as we speak, I already highlighted in the month of July, which I've gone on record to say that we've actually pulled back in 1+ DPD levels, have really shown normalization in July. So there is a confidence in stability and resilience. That's point number one. Point number two, in our some of the geographies which I have highlighted, our average, which is our home state, which is a bulk of our AUM, plus the northern states where 1+ is below 4%, GNP is below 1% of this. Some of the states which I earlier highlighted in the call, which is Maharashtra, some parts of MP, and a little bit of Karnataka have really shown the spike. And some part was season, and some part where we've actually pulled back on the credit side and really tightening our norms to the segment which we serve actually. And specifically, if I were to talk about this, this is below in less than 5 lakh below segment, which we've seen the elevated levels.
Got it. And sir, just a follow-up there. In the state of Gujarat, particularly Surat or somewhere, you're not seeing anything unusual?
No, we've not seen anything, any unusual or material deterioration as far as that is concerned, whether it is Surat or whether it is any of the locations in Gujarat. And these also, we are cognizant of the fact, and we are confident of really pulling it back as we trend in this quarter. And some of the green shoots, as already highlighted, are the OnePlus plowback, which has happened. And quarter one typically seasonally actually had moved up. So two or three factors which led to that, but July is really the data and our numbers really talk about what we've really put in and our efforts really fructifying into crystallizing the efforts and pulling it back. And as a credit first
Got it.
and as a risk first institution, we've always believed quality over quantity. So if you look at on the perspective of these states where sanction ratios will be well below the other home state and the states where we have functioned. So we've tightened our credit bucket, we've tightened our qualifiers when it comes to the segments, the geographies, and the products.
Got it, sir. And sir, lastly, if I can ask, you shared that this is a one-time impact, and we understand something similar in one Q of last year, where RBI had come out with a circular, right, wherein we said that only after the check is handed over should we recognize disbursement. I'm glad this is one step forward now, where we say only when the money gets credited to the customer's account is where we will show it as disbursement. But just trying to understand on a rolling basis, right, I mean, while 2Q, 3Q will be better, but whatever we lost out in 1Q, how will they be made up? Because whatever you maybe hand over in terms of checks in the month of February or March, they will eventually get encashed or credited only in April next year.
So I think as you start building upon that kitty of check, which is cut depending on the transaction, there is a rollover period which starts moving across. It's not that the disbursement is lost. When we say that there's already a check, there's a transaction which has to be completed depending upon the type of transaction as resale, as a builder purchase, as a part of those transactions, it takes its own time. So unlike the normal time, we would have been wary of the fact that if there were no check cuts, if there were no disbursements really on the level of check cuts not happening, would have been a concerning one. So you build across a pipeline, and you build that pipeline, and the pipeline has a rollover impact coming across depending upon when it gets credited and when it gets realized in customers' accounts. So yeah, the quarter one had an impact, but quarter two, quarter three onwards, it will have a rolling impact which would be there. On Aavas has always believed on governance and quality first, and I think this is a historic step to really go across and get this on a big. It's a big change for the distribution, for the teams, and for us as well. But we believe what is right from an institutional perspective, from a governance perspective, from a fair practice for a customer transparency. It's a bold step by Aavas as an institution.
Yes, sir. That's all from my side. Thank you very much for patiently answering my questions, and I wish you and your team the very best.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Bhavesh Kanani from Svan Investments. Please go ahead. Yes, Mr. Bhavesh, go with the question, please.
Am I audible?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bhavesh.
Yeah. Sir, just curious on this realization impacting the disbursements. While we are using check as an instrument to disburse the money, any reason why we are not pushing out disbursement to, let's say, NEFT, IMPS route so that the credit is faster? And even the period that you mentioned, 10, 15 days before which the check is credited, that sounds unusually longer than one would expect. So this is one. And second, more of a clarification. You mentioned that the OnePlus EPD sequential increase we have seen is already normalizing in July. So should we expect Q2 OnePlus EPD number to be flat year on year?
See, I'll answer your two questions. The first question is on the type of transaction. If you look at, I highlighted, the when the transaction type is typically an MSME or a LAP or a top-up, wherein the RTGS plays, or where the construction is there, self-construction, the first disbursement tranche is happening, those are the ones which will go through as far as RTGS or is concerned. The nature of transaction when it is a resale, and as you will appreciate, resale has its own time between the buyer and the seller negotiating, the time when he gets a token for registration, all that. It's a long-drawn process which really builds across when it comes to building the check, getting issued, getting realized. It is subject to the transaction really going through. So that is the nature of the transaction of resale or in the case of fresh builder purchase. So these are the typical two transactions where you have to really hold on to the time. And certain geographies like Gujarat, Maharashtra and other places like Karnataka was there, where e-khatas and others had long standing queues when it came to completing the transaction. So those are very nature of the geographies and the nature of the places which you really operate in. So primarily the type of transaction and the nature of the normal sub-registrar office really defines how much time it will take. But the positive side, if you look at it, even with that, neither do we charge any interest to the customer, nor we realize that for on a disbursement perspective. So we are neutral on that actually. Second question of yours on one-day DPD. One-day DPD July is lower than the last year Q2. And I already highlighted that it is below 4%. And with our efforts and understanding of risk and credit and part of it, we are confident of rolling it back and being in a guided range of less than 5%.
And I appreciate the confidence you have of rolling it back. Just want to get it specific that when we say roll back, are we confident of getting it back to Q2? Last year?
Yeah, that's what we, we said that we remain in the guided range of less than 5%. And one of the green shoots clearly talked about the July numbers. I've gone across on record to tell the July numbers of already being there on record. So that gives us a confidence on the part of our effort.
Sir, just last one on the same point. While you explained the geographical perspective of where this 1 plus DPD deterioration is coming from, any common thread from borrower's profile perspective, which could have led to this sequential movement?
I think one thing which is clear-cut spanning out is less than 5 lakhs if I were to look at in these geographies. But that's not the case in the other geographies like Rajasthan, Haryana, Delhi and UP, which I mentioned. These are the geographies in Maharashtra, MP and Karnataka, so to say, which is less than 5 lakhs, which we've seen the spike in elevated levels when it comes to the ticket size.
Any common thread on occupation type of the borrower, which may be more impacted than the others?
Nothing as specific which we really have been able to figure that out. So it is actually less than 5 lakh segment which is getting and
smaller cities.
And smaller cities in the smaller ticket size which is there.
Got it, sir. Wonderful. Thank you for the answers and wishing you best of luck.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Raghav from Amrit Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, good evening and thanks for the opportunity. I have two questions. One, I noticed that your employees per branch, that number has been going up since last 2 quarters, which is leading to higher growth in employee expenses also. So I wanted to understand what is your strategy in terms of branch staffing and why have you increased people at the branches since last 2-3 quarters. That's my first question. And then my other question, in the same backdrop, how do you continue to deliver an OPEX efficiency? Because now you're saying 18-20% AUM growth, but it's probably a higher employee base. Those are my two specific questions. Thank you.
So thanks, Raghav. See, on your question of the employee increase, if you look at the quarter four, we added the branches in the last quarter four that had an increase in our employee strength. And Going forward, we will add new branches in Tamil Nadu, as I spoke on the call. So this front loading of the thing is not where we've already had the branches, so we had to put the manpower in place. So it really aligns with our movement of.
Sorry to interject you, but you know, I've been looking at this trend of employees per branch, which is a simple calculation of employees divided by branches. There's some quarters ago that number used to be say 15, 16. Now it has come up to 18, and hence the question on employee.
Unlike the earlier times, Raghav, I really appreciate your question. See, if you look at the, we never had the earlier types of digital fulfillment like CSE, eMitra and India Post Book. The CSE is the one which is a new type which is there and which has started giving us green shoots. So that required for a fulfillment perspective the staff to be there to handle that channel and to engage and to get the business out of that channel. So I think that's one part as far as digital channels are concerned, addition of the manpower. Secondly is on the brand side. So these two cumulative added actually has increased the manpower, and we have not added manpower compared to, if you look at last 2 years, we never added manpower, rather. If we continued the one, this is a time when the channel addition happened and the branch addition happened. And last 2 years, we've been into a transformation and transition phase. We've completed with that. Now with growth and expansion of the states and the geographies in place, that's going to be our focus areas.
Sir, understood. But, you know, coming back to the original question, we, while good to see that you're adding employees and you're adding channels, but it is also resulting in a higher growth in the employee cost versus the AUM growth, which is negating the OPEX efficiency narrative that we understand, right? So I wanted to understand from that perspective also that you're guiding for a AUM growth, but also with a higher employee base and probably higher employee cost.
Yeah, so Raghav, we will really appreciate when you put across the branch. We should, as a franchise, in the last 2 years, we were flat on the employee side. Once we've added the channels, we have added the branches, we've added the employees as a result of which, and their conversions or their really productivity doesn't set in the first couple of months, right? So I think we'll have to give the time really for the channel as well as the branches really to complete and increase the productivity range. While I look at it as an investment in our employee base, which we will be able to monetize in the coming quarters. We are pretty confident on that. And we continue our view of cost optimization, which we've actually continued monitored across, saying that we'll try to be operationally efficient. So this is the current investment which is there to support the business growth.
Thank you, sir. That answers my question. Thank you.
Thanks, Raghav.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Harshit T. from TNG Invest. Please go ahead.
Hello. Hi, sir. Am I audible?
Yeah.
Hi. Thanks a lot. Sir, I think just had one question to understand it better. That there would be a point of time from which we would have changed the disbursement recognition, say somewhere in the start of the 1Q, if I assume. Then am I right in the assumption that our 2Q number will be higher than a regular because there will be some flow through from the 1Q, end of the 1Q flows, and 2Q will remain the way it is? And in that context, should we assume that if we, say for example, look the H1 dispersal post 2Q versus the H1 dispersal last year, then it will be a like-to-like comparison itself. And am I reading it right that it's just a Q1 dispersal shifting to Q2, that is the only impact of the change, and H1 versus H1 will be same comparison?
Yeah, you are spot on and you articulated it very well. The one which is rollover of quarter one will have an impact and a rolling positive impact on quarter two, and the real comparison would be H1 versus H1. So spot on your value of evaluation and articulation of the quantum of the rollover.
Understood. So sir, just on the July number which you said 600 crore.
550 to 600.
Right. So that is having that advantage of some flow through from June.
Yeah, right, right.
Okay, got it. And the second, yeah, sorry.
So, see, as you rightly pointed out, there is some part of check cut, as I talked about, it takes somewhere between 15 to 30 days and some transaction 30 to 45 days. So some which got in the month of May got in June, some part of latter end of May got in the first week of July, and the June really transformed and rolled back to the month of August. So there is a rolling impact which really comes in.
Got it. Even though I'm just trying to see that, clarify myself itself, then YOY basis, will it be like to like comparison or not, is what I'm thinking. Because will it be or not is the one question. And second, sir, also to add to it, that if we look at the industry, other players itself, I'm not asking names or etc., but are we the only one who are following this right now? Or has the industry already shifted to a large extent? I'm not sure if some other player would have commented on this point itself, but just wanted to get your understanding.
We can't comment on the industry. I think everybody has their own way. But as Aavas, we always believe in a best level of governance and fair practice when we deal with our customers. So we discuss at a board level, and board has also guided us ki it's better to transit from check to real money when we put in the pocket of a customer on that day. We treat a disbursement as well as we charge the interest from that day.
Okay.
It has definitely impact on the business. As Sachinderji, I think, mentioned, and I think one or two, three, four questions has came on this topic, and I think we tried from our side to answer that questions. But definitely, it has impacted our business in this quarter, and then after it created a opening buffer, then it keep rolling buffer will help us to maintain our business in quarter over quarter every.
Got it. Sir, one final thing is, sorry, if I may ask, just one last question. That our employee per branch of 18, to Raghav's question, there is slight increase, but I'm saying that if I compare it to any other peer, that number is around 11, 12, at best, I think even for the peers also, that 11, 12 number is, I'm seeing, is at the highest one. Why would it be that, I'm just trying to understand that, is there a rationalization program? Or what could be the reason that our employee per branch is so high to that extent?
So if you look at it, ours is a direct distribution model. The majority is direct distribution. In the direct distribution model, the employee on roles would be higher than what typically intermediate-led or channel-led kind of distribution would happen. So that's a primary difference when you compare to the cohort which you are really comparing with. So this has a positive impact if you look at from a perspective of two things. I would really highlight is the quality which we demonstrate over a period of last 13 years. Second is on our BT out. Because it's direct source, the control of the customer and thus is much more pronounced with us. So as a result of which, our BT out percentage is the lowest at 4.9%. So I think somewhere...
Yeah. So I'm just looking at the calculated repayment rate, sir. If I just do a basic calculation, then that 16-17% of annualized run rate repayment rate is something which is very similar across all players. So I'm just trying to differentiate. So I'm not sure within that repayment, obviously it will be some BT out, some regular payments. But I'm just trying to understand that then, and even if you look at the other peers, there the intermediate channel would be a part, but direct would be a larger part of the sourcing is what our understanding was that. So I'm just trying to understand that from your perspective, is this 18 just a matter of the business model, or there is more to do it with it and more related to efficiency which we have room to improve in that case?
So I think there are two points. One point is on the BT out. If you compare it with the cohort which is there, I think, and you would really have the numbers, and I can really tell you with confidence that we would be the lowest at 4.9% of the BT out. Secondly, I think from a perspective of the referring about 18% of that, that's a function of how much is the part prepayment on those really happening fast. But the comparison is the normal rundown, which is on the tenure. Second is a part prepayment, and third is a BT out. I think that component, which we are very watchful and we are mindful, is the lowest, which is at 4.9%. And as you really build the digital channels, others which are direct source but sourced through a one, requires a manpower and requires a field force really to complete that. And certain part of it really starts investing earlier than finally giving you that productivity.
Got it. Fair point, sir. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Ankit Cheda from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sir, just to allude on the previous question, that this Q1 disbursement was weaker than last Q1, and if you put together first half for last year and this year, you mentioned that it would be similar. Is that right?
Ankit, come again. Sankit?
So first quarter disbursement slightly lower than last year first quarter, but as Harshit highlighted that maybe Q2, if you include Q2, then first half of this year will be similar to first half of last year in terms of disbursement, to which you nodded. So.
No, we talked about that comparable ones will come across where you have the rollover of the first quarter coming to quarter two. We not told that quarter H1 will be equivalent to H1 of the last year. So if that is the impression which you are holding, H1 to H1 will be higher. And one we gone out and told about July to July comparison which was there. So I went on 550 to 600 crore is the disbursement which is there, which is 16% compared to the previous July. Actually, if you were to really look at it.
Yeah. Okay. This July, the disbursements have grown 16% over last July.
Yeah, and we are confident because of this rollover and others in July, August, September, we are confident of a growth which is in range of double-digit growth.
Okay. And the full year loan growth guidance you alluded to would be 18-20%, the similar run rate we should assume on the disbursement?
Yeah, we have guided the AUM growth and we are confident with our kind of efforts and quarter two really giving us a good upside. We will continue to be in the range of 18 to 20% on the AUM side.
Okay. And this is for this year or maybe going ahead also, this is the new normalized level of growth guidance that you would carry?
So I think once we stabilize, if you look at the quarter one, so quarter one really cover up doesn't happen as you really would appreciate. As we get into the next financial year, we come back to our guidance out between 20-25%. Once this everything settled down. So I think if you look at it last couple of years, the tech transformation, the transition, and this bold step of doing what is right from a fair practice code and customer transparency, all that settling down, that impact would get finally over in the current financial year. And the next financial year, we will look at 20-25% of AUM growth.
Sure, sir. And lastly, last year went into, say, tech upgradation and we did expect some operating efficiency to kick in maybe going ahead. Do you see that coming anytime soon in this year? If yes, how much of OPEX benefit that we should assume maybe this year or next year?
I think we continuously focus and guide across getting the tech transformation and something which we've done over a period of time. You look at the three clear-cut demonstrable ones words or the TAT which has come down from 13 days to 6 days. Our normal, had this tech transformation not been there, doing this online disbursement, realization disbursement would never have been possible for us. I think that is a move forward which is helping us to do what we are doing at this period of time because of the underlying tech which is available to us, giving us good governance, compliance and customer transparency for our transitioning. With everything at done and dusted with us from a tech transformation perspective, from a perspective of transition, we are there to really get that growth coming back and going at, and again, doing whatever is required from a cost optimization perspective. As we start seeing that green shoots really coming across, we will continue to guide that we will work across towards the cost optimization where, which is led by technology, keeping risk and quality intact.
Sure, sir, that was helpful.
Thanks, Ankit.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as that was the last question for the day, I would now hand the conference over to the management for the closing comments. Over to you, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, as we conclude today's earning call, I want to express my heartfelt gratitude to each one of you for your participation and engagement. The dedication of our team, the trust of our shareholders, and the loyalty of our customers have been instrumental in our growth. I express my deepest gratitude to all our regulators and stakeholders whose constant faith and support have been the wind beneath our wings. We remain optimistic about the future and are confident that our strategic initiatives will continue to drive sustainable growth and shareholder value. If you have any further questions or require additional information, please feel free to reach out to Rakesh, our Head of Investor Relations. Thank you and have a wonderful time ahead. God bless.
Thank you. On behalf of Aavas Financiers Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us and you may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.